And at one time, the whole idea of communion, religious communion, was the idea of communing was to enter into the spirit for a moment to regain perspective for the next 6 days. What has happened all too often in the West now is that the seventh day has become like the other six, in the sense that even religion has become another third chakra drama, another power relationship thing, where people dress up to look nice and to impress one another, and they just debate whether or not the minister is giving intelligent sermons and so on, and the whole idea of the entering into the spirit got lost in the shuffle. And then every now and then it happens, and the moment the person has another moment of grace, and when they have that moment of grace, then they look at their whole life, and again, their life is freshened and different, and they see that behind all of this, there is this beautiful inner place. Now, the methods of getting from the third to the fourth, that is getting from that ego chakra or that ego psychic energy place into the compassion center or the center where the spirit resides at the lowest form of it, in fourth center. You can do this a variety of ways. You can do it, first of all, by force. That is, you can manipulate the chemistry of your body through extremely long fasts, through extreme deprivation of sleep, through sensory deprivation, through cutting off all sensory input, through being in a sensory deprivation tank. You can do it through through oxygen, changes in the amount of oxygen in your system, through hyperoxygenation. You can do it through a very highly evolved method called pranayama, which is the control of prana, or the control of this life force, or this psychic energy, through techniques of breathing. And I work with this method, and it is an extraordinarily powerful method. It is as powerful for me as LSD ever was. And it's so powerful that one must use it very delicately when one gets into advanced stages, because it really works, it does it. Because just as I said to you that if Teresa Neumann, the Christian mystic, was able to live on one Eucharist wafer a day through her own purity, you have to understand that when a yogi is buried alive and lives for a long period of time without breathing, he really does live for a long period of time without breathing. Because our whole model of energy transformations is based on being a first, second, or third chakra person. And when you're a fourth chakra person, it's all different, because you can merge with the universe around you, and you no longer be a finite being who needs certain kind of finite energy conversion. In the grosser sense, you can work with finer energy. And the first time I went with pranayama, with psychedelics, when I would go into this place of non-breath, I would be in such a state from the psychedelics that I couldn't determine what was happening to me. I mean, so much was happening, and I couldn't tell. I would not be able to judge where I had been when I had been in the state. But with pranayama, it's a little more systematic and controlled. And the first time I went into a state where my breath stopped and where I no longer was gasping for breath, this is a very delicate place, an extremely delicate place. And in order to be able to do that, you have to be able to make your mind totally one-pointed. Because when you are holding your breath, those of you that have ever done any swimming, you know when you're holding your breath, you get to a place where you're really struggling to hold your breath any longer. And all of your attention is captured by you, he who is holding his breath, that me which is running out of breath. And the secret at that moment is to be able to put your entire attention somewhere else in your body and continue to hold your breath. In other words, you no longer identify with he who is running out of breath, and you're still not breathing. And at that point, you enter into another state of consciousness where suddenly you don't have to breathe. And what happens to me most of the time is when that happens, I say, my God, I'm not breathing, and then I start to breathe. I scare myself. I bring myself back through my labeling of that process. Now, I'll just give you a little feeling of what the drama of that process is, although, as I say, it's a delicate process, and you really, it's very good to do this kind of thing beyond the introductory breathing exercises, which I've been teaching people. The advanced ones, it's good to do with pretty close supervision. What is involved is you close certain pranic openings in your body with muscle contractions and pulling, stimulating nerves which pull in on muscles down at the bottom of your torso and in your, it's called the Uddiyana Bund, which is right here below your rib cage, and you take in breath through one nostril into this place, and then you bring your, you close another opening, and you compress the air right in this upper chamber, right up in here. Now, this is a very far-out story, but I'll tell it to you anyway. It's, for most people, it'll just seem like, you know, another one of those Buck Rogers, you think you go to the moon, huh? When you have this breath compressed this way, you focus your attention on the bottom of your spine, or right in front of that place, and you imagine a triangle that is made up of fire. And in the middle of that triangle is a lingam, or a phallus, around which is wound 3.5 times a serpent with its head facing down, a sleeping serpent. And you work with that until you are, your total consciousness is on that triangle of fire on that serpent. And then the breath, the compression of breath, you've got this air here, you use it like a hammer, like a sledgehammer, and with your, at a certain point you press it, and this block of air goes, it doesn't actually go, but the pressure behind it, you press with it, and it hits down on the head of the snake. And as my teacher says, it irritates the snake very much. And the snake raises his head, and he starts to climb. And boy, when he climbs, you know it, I'll tell you. It's the most extraordinary experience, because as it starts to climb, you, each chakra, as it gets to, they depict it in the books as all the petals of the lotus opening as it gets to each place. It's like a lotus flower, and each one has a different number of petals, and it goes whoosh, whoosh, and you get these. Usually what happens is that the first two are so intense you almost can't handle them. I mean, the sexual arousal is so intense at that point, and you've got to keep your mind absolutely focused, or it'll just become a tremendous sexual experience, genital sexual experience. But if you can keep your mind focused all the time, that energy keeps starting to move up that spine, a spiral type thing going up the spine, and it goes through each chakra and it opens. And when it gets to the fourth chakra, you feel these waves of bliss. You go into samadhi. You go into a low level of samadhi, and you experience tremendous bliss and compassion. And then if you keep going, it goes into the fifth and sixth, and you go through each of the experiences I described earlier in the afternoon. And I usually read at this point, I don't have it with me, from the sayings of Ramakrishna, that beautiful little description. He's sitting around with his devotees in the temple at Banaswara, the temple in Turumbali. And he says, he wants to tell him what it feels like when this thing happens. And he says, well, I'll tell you, he's describing it happens this, and then you feel this, and he says, when it gets here, you feel this, and he says, and then when Kundalini raises to here, you feel, And at that point, he goes into samadhi. And they hold him up, and he's like completely zonked out. So he, I mean, he's like in another place. And they wait and wait, and he finally comes down, and he says, "Now, as I was saying, when it gets here, and finally when it gets here," and he goes into samadhi. And after about three or four times, there are tears streaming down his cheeks, and he says, "Look, I really want to tell you how it is. I, ego, want to tell you how it is, but the Divine Mother won't let me. She seals my lips." In other words, you get to that place, and you're beyond any descriptive things. There's no words. There's nothing to describe it, because it has gone beyond any of the rational, intellectual, the ways that can be communicated this way. It's only knowable directly through experience. See, and the perplexing problem to the many of the people who have experimented with psychedelics is the psychedelics have passed them rapidly through these different states, and they come back into their other state, and they are in a, they go around, and somebody says, "Well, tell me, what is it all about? What's so important about it?" I remember my mother saying to me, "Well, what is it? Well, what happens?" And I look at her and I say, "It's ineffable." "Oh, great. You know, it's ineffable." Well, every mystic visionary always said it was ineffable. It's ineffable. It's indescribable. I can't even begin to tell you what it's about. Words don't do it, no matter how hard I try. Now, besides these more intense and violent methods, such as pranayama and... I knew he wasn't doing that all himself. You take the mantra we were chanting this morning at 5:30, those of us that were in the meditation room. This morning we chanted for a couple of hours, we chanted one mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, just over and over and over and over again. Now if you do that mantra correctly, you do that mantra so it starts Om down here, and it goes Om Mani Padme Hum. It's to bring you into the fourth chakra, but it'll take you all the way. It's to suck the energy up. You see, it's a process of focusing on moving energy, moving it up your spine. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. And it's like dipping a bucket down and bringing it up. It's called converting Bindu to Ojas. Bindu is that form of energy which is in the grosser forms. It's the form that you get through eating, and it's the form that you expend through action and through sexual energy and in digestion of food. That's Bindu. And then when you pass it up your spine, it gets converted into another form of energy. And when you see holy men that are very pure and that have not expended all their energy in sexual expenditures or in action or in ego, you see this, what's called tej, this light in their forehead. They just light coming out of them. It's just a high being. It's just full of light. And all the pictures of holy beings always are depicted with like this just emanation from their upper centers. That's ojas. Presently working on a book, which I seem to be working on forever, I think, which is called From Bindu to Ojas, which is the story of traveling. It's a travelogue about traveling up the Sushumna, which very few people do. It's, you know, it's a National Geographic type thing. Complete with pictures and strange beings you meet. I'm writing it as five levels of metaphor, you see, because it's a travelogue, and it's also the whole transformation in this culture going from primarily a sexually oriented culture to this next level of ego, and then from ego into the spirit. So it's It's the way culture shifts as culture wakens to new levels. That's Bindu to Ojas. And it's also my own trip from being a Freudian to doing this. And it's also the pranayama and the methods of yoga and so on. It's fun to write it all up. Cosmic humor. And it's all a model on Toynbee's book, From the Oxus to the Jumna, which we had with us when you're driving through Afghanistan. And as we sat there, you know, we'd be on this little back road, and we had this Land Rover, and it would be bouncy, and we'd be just driving along, you know, high, just enjoying ourselves. And we'd say, well, let's see what Toynbee had to say. And you'd open the book, and it would say, my native driver, through extreme will, was able to cross these wild, raging torrents. And sure, there were rivers, and you had to cross rivers, but that's what a Land Rover's for. And you'd read the book, and you'd think you were really having an adventure. I'd say, read more. You know, wow, this is really wild. I mean, we're really in dangerous territory. So I'm doing his take of it all, too. So that when you do mantra, the constant use of mantra is a constant process of moving that energy up, you see, because what it's constantly doing, you see, what I've been saying to everybody all the time is you've got to make the profane sacred. You've got to when I talk about profane, it merely means that you're seeing it all from the first, second, or third chakra. And sacred is as if you were seeing it in the fourth, fifth, and up chakra. And so when I say making something sacred that was profane, it means taking any act you're doing it and seeing it in its divine sense, in its spiritual sense, in its higher sense, in the oneness, in the cosmic humor, in all those other levels, in the witness sense, making it sacred. And always when you're doing that, you're looking as if you already were in the fourth, fifth, or sixth chakra. You're constantly bringing, and every time you read holy books, not books about holy books, not books about written by guys who are telling you from the third chakra about guys who are at the fifth and sixth chakra, but read the writings or the sayings of people who are at these higher chakras. Because then as you read them, you climb into that place through empathy with the writer, and that takes you constantly, keeps giving you more and more perspective from these other places. Because once you have been high, quote, and come down, you understand that from then on, the process is one of approximation, of changing your entire way of thinking who you are to catch up with the being who you have sensed yourself to be. I mean, I have sensed and known that I am an extraordinarily beautiful, divine being, just like everybody else is. But the way you'd hear me talk, you'd think I was just another, you know, draggy neurotic. I mean, like, what kind of a line is I got to protect myself and go by myself or for fear I won't be able to? That's all models. That's all heavy stuff I got to get rid of still. And sometimes I say, well, I'm rid of it all. You know, I don't have any of that. I can just dance through it all and then boom. Because I'm only rid of them at one level. I intellectually get rid of them faster than I'm rid of them. See, intellectually, I can say, yes, I am divine and I am pure energy, but emotionally, I don't know that. Emotionally, I'm still a hung-up guy with, you know, finite energy and finite mind and finite everything. A beginner on the path. That's what prayer is. Prayer is one of these techniques. Prayer is definitely a fourth chakra and fifth chakra opening technique. Now, there are also other more highly sophisticated techniques For example, each of the chakras has connected with it a certain colors. Each of the chakras has connected with it certain sounds or certain vibrations. And therefore, under certain conditions, you can subject yourself to these sounds or these vibrations or these colors, and that will intensify the involvement you have with that particular chakra. And there are certain people who are able to diagnose. I can do it just a little from your spine. Begin to tell from your spine and from your presence and so on where you are on this trip, and then find ways of designing methods to keep you moving. I don't yet work with it. I don't teach it because I am not that adept at it, but I understand, I'm beginning to understand the model of it and how it works. Just as music, various sounds, these kinds of music take you to different places. The martial music takes you to a certain place. I mean, when you want the boys to go off and fight, you don't play love songs. And when you want to make love, you don't play marching music. Unless you're very cosmic. And I guess you can do it. And there is music like Mahler and like Bach and Missa Solemnis, Beethoven, and a tremendous number of pieces of music that will take you into the spirit. Berlioz Requiem. There are pieces of music. There are certain kinds of musical instruments. There are certain things that approximate sounds that are really, although the Western mind doesn't know that and doesn't design it that way, they intuitively use those sounds. Systematically, those sounds are directly connected with the opening of certain chakras. Just like rhythms, rhythmic beats. There are certain kind of rhythms that enhance the passions. There are other kinds of rhythms that put you into trances. So many beats per second. And so voodoo dances and certain kinds of drumming never arouses sexual things. It just takes people into higher states just through the rhythm, through pure rhythm. And you shift the rhythm a little bit and everybody's running off into the bushes. Drummer stops to blow his nose and the whole game is changed. You said it?
What are the colors?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know to teach it. I know what I know to teach, and I know what I just begin to grasp, and I don't teach what I just begin to grasp. I only say what I think I, you know, I say what is, the way it feels like, isn't it? And when I just am speculating or feeling my way into something, I don't ever talk about it. But I do know that in the Guru Rinpoche thing we work with, in the Guru Rinpoche purification process, you experience in the Om Ah Hum, you experience it as white, red, blue. And I think that's probably white, red, blue is probably those three chakras. I think that's the dominant color for those, at least within, that's one of them anyway. But then I know red is also connected with the second chakra, sexual chakra. What chakras are Om Ah Hum connected? Om, sixth, Ah, fifth, Hum, fourth. So that's why we do that consecration of the food the way we do it. When we take the food, when we take what we call prasad, we don't eat food, we take prasad, which means consecrated food. which means first you've offered it to other, to higher beings, and the second thing is you are constantly getting out of that drama of I am this body feeding it with this food. In other words, you're getting out of thinking of that particular energy transformation as what it is, as what it is at that level, and you're thinking of it as what it is at another level. And you're seeing it's merely, you know, it's merely movement of patterns of energy, if you will. Because if one woman, if one Christian mystic can spend 12 years living on one Eucharist wafer, you don't need all that stuff you're sticking in you, because there's one person who did it. So, I mean, the only difference between you and her is she has a choice. She doesn't have to eat a Eucharist wafer. She could eat a steak, I'm sure, and potatoes. But the fact is, if one person can do it, it raises the possibility that we are still just like primitive cavemen in our use of the implements of energy that are available to us. And the problem is our perspective point, where we're looking from. And if you're looking out of meat and potato eyes, you got to feed it meat and potato. You got to feed the mouth meat and potatoes. And part of why I eat the same food every day and eat a bland diet and eat very simply and eat the grains and things is to lighten my attachment to that whole illusion, which has been very heavy because of the tradition I grew up in, where food was such a very important part of my happiness quotient each day. Many of us that are here are very much into the fourth chakra, fourth and sixth chakras. And many of us, I think that anybody that came into the world of this particular universe and hung out for a while would feel that they were in the presence of extraordinarily powerful people, a collection of extraordinarily powerful people. And I think that that kind of power, which is that power that comes from that purification and from that direction, is always, it's always imperative that one has the wisdom to know not to use that power. Just as you can have power to get people to like you or to do what you want to do and do it in ego ways, you see that each time you do that, you are merely taking that energy you got from being in a higher center and then having the model of use of energy at a lower center reexert itself, and it's catching you back in center two or center three. Because at each new center you get to, just as Western man is having to struggle with the power he got from getting to center three from center two, into the ego and into the rational mind and into the technology, so we are going to have to struggle with what it means to get into the fourth chakra. Going to keep struggling at every level. You got to give it up each time. You got to give it up each time. Because if you stop there, it's never going to be enough. But it may take you lifetimes to figure that out. The drama is always to purify, purify as each new thing comes, notice, accept it, be it, and go on. Just keep doing the process of purification until there is no separate being any longer. No separate being any longer. Keep the mantra going. I mean, you're doing the mantra and all of a sudden you're in a state of extraordinary ecstasy and bliss. And, you know, well, that's the end of that. You're like, wow, ooh. Keep the mantra going. Oh, wow, what bliss. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Keep right at it. Right at it. Don't get carried away by all these experiences because they really get groovy. These experiences, and the minute you have an experience that's really high, the ego immediately, third chakra immediately takes it over and says, see what I got for you? I can have this anytime I want it. Look at that. I just sit down, I do pranayama, and I'll get this great bliss thing. Wow. Look at how good I am. Pride. Pride, the dark night of the soul. Poor St. John of the Cross, he struggled with it. He knew them all. And how many Christian mystics have talked about that one? Boy. Pardon. So anytime you feel fatigue, use it as a cue to remind you and feel great compassion for your illusion. Because it is another clue. It's another clue to the fact that you're identified in the wrong place. Because if you are spirit and you are energy, how can you be fatigued? What an illusion that must be. So use those information about bodily states to tell you how you're doing. Don't get caught in them, just note them. If you get caught in them, that's just making them more and more important. That's neurosis. That's that drama. That's ego drama. Don't get caught in them. Just note them and get on with it. Just adopt simple methods and keep doing them. It's as simple as that. And here we are. I mean, everything we've said this afternoon, we've all heard it, and we all non-understand all this, and here we are. And the more we do these methods, the more we stay right in these states of, here we are. Man, it's amazing. Behind all that, we're still here. Because when you know who you truly are, you are energy. You are it all. You are the energy. Because if you and the wind, if you are no longer being pushed by the wind, because you and the wind are one, and you understand and have opened in that way, you and the wind are one, then the energy of the wind and the energy of you are one energy. And you go like the wind. And when you and the sun and you and light have become one, then you are light and you travel as light. And that's the whole business I was reading to you the other day about the astral plane. That's what happens when you start to get into these other planes. You start to, that's what the whole business of astral projection and psychic phenomena are connected with these processes. The time has once again come. And when we meet or part, before we do that, before we either meet or part again, there is a brief, as usual, meditation tonight at 7:30. Are there any people that have arrived that are planning to live on this property overnight that have not got a living facility? Two. Anybody else? Four and two. And how many people are presently in the guest tent? One, two, three, four, five. And five. Do you have sleeping bags or any sleeping equipment? Two sleeping bags? Right. They have a tent. Oh, they have a tent. Great. But two. Okay. And you have no equipment at all. You have a station wagon, that's nice. And you have what?
Sleep?
Nothing. There's nothing. Nothing. Well, that's a good beginning.
We may have room in our tent.
You have a tent?
Yes, we may have room.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, check with the guest tent. There's still room. The guest tent should hold 10 people. The 10 may not be totally happy, but all of the tents are up there. I'd like to review the rules for the people that have just come on the property. There are some very simple rules of the game. We are dealing with an interface here, two interfaces, one with the larger community and one with my father and his guests. And the rule of the game is that in part, we say the word, a word which honors the Atman in each other. We honor the light. We honor that which is spirit. We remind ourselves that who we are is truly divine. And when you meet somebody around here, when you use that word, use it with consciousness. And those of you that are residents, I hope you will realize that every new face you see is a new face of God. And it's once again a new lesson if you are open enough to learn it. And any paranoias that you create and have to live inside, and it's a heavy place to live. So remember, efficiency does not transcend here and nowness, whatever you're doing. The word is namaste, namaste. So may I say to all of you, namaste.
Namaste.